I'm Samus. This is Two Trolls and a Brew. My co-host Travis is not here right now, and the reason why is because this is in post. The reason this is in post is because we had a great deal of tech issues with this particular episode. Failures on Travis's end with his headset going out, not being able to stay connected, issues with Pamela, not recording parts of the show. It's just a giant mess, to be perfectly honest. I've literally done everything that I could to try to pull the show together. Unfortunately, to me, it still sounds very, very bad, to the point where the main issue has boiled down to now like a constant, like, I don't know if you guys can hear that, but this is kind of what it sounds like to me, and this is unfortunately the best that I'm able to get it. So if you can listen to this, I applaud you. I hope you stick around for the entire show, because it was a great show, but it, I couldn't do it, and I would totally understand if you can either. So hopefully you can listen. There's a lot of great information about the cards that we experienced at the pre-release, but if you can't get through this episode, I totally understand, and hopefully you will still join us next week for Two Trolls and a Brew. This is Samus, and Travis. Good luck.
Hello.
All right, well, apparently we're doing this show in 5-minute increments, so let's get right to it. Travis, tell me about your troll card and why you think it's a troll card.
All right, so Triskaidekaphobia, I think, is a troll card because it's a card that you have to build around, and if you don't, then you're going to lose at the same time that your opponent does, unless they have life gain or some way to hurt themselves. Which, I mean, it is a black card, and historically they have never been fond of fairness. I guess I could say that.
We were talking about it in the first show, that with the number of pain lands that will most likely be running around in this new standard, there will probably be pretty easy ways to be able to get yourself under 13.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're taking time getting pulled close, it's pretty easy to get under that. But then on the flip side, like, if I control the enchantment, Triska, whatever, I don't like 13s. If I control that card, right, and during your upkeep, or I guess during my upkeep, right, we would both be at 13 and we'd lose the game. And we both, like, pay our one, right, to lose life, then we could, you know, go down again, go to 11,
mm-hmm.
and then it basically never does anything again except, I guess, tick down, right?
Right.
So it's kind of okay-ish. I'm just not in love with it. The reason why is I played against it twice at the release tournament, the pre-release tournament, and it won both games for me. And it was not in my deck. Basically, it just gave me, instead of, I need to get you to 0, I went, oh, I need to get you to 13, done. And it was pretty easy to do in that situation. I pointed out that basically, if you have this in your deck, you want to be well below 13
mm-hmm.
when you cast it, and then get your opponent there. With no ways to adjust the life total. But I think that's going to add a level of difficulty at this particular moment, that it may not be worthwhile. But I am excited to see what happens. We both had different approaches on how we'd build a deck like this. I suggested going like the black-green landfall route, using things like... What are the different landfall enchantments called, Travis? Don't they have a name?
Retreat to Hagra is the black one, and Retreat to Kazandu.
Specifically using those two retreats and fetch lands, I think you could force some life down while keeping your life total up. Maybe also doing something with, I want to say a little bit of ally work or something, maybe, and some token manufacturing. So you have a way to sacrifice creatures with the Because basically we have two guys, right, that now drain a life when the creature dies and you gain a life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're, I think the one's white and it's a flip card, and the other one is a, it's just the ally from the last set.
Right.
So it's possible that you could take advantage of those things along with, like, green tokens or green token production to drain your opponent straight to 13 when necessary, not a minute before, not a minute after. Because if you have a situation where you have fetch lands on the table...
Which you won't.
And they have... I mean, you might.
Not.
We still have two fetch lands. They're bad fetch lands by comparison, right? Like, they're slow fetch lands.
Mm-hmm.
But they still sit on the table. Plus, you still also have the one that pays 4 mana to do, to go get 2 lands.
Yeah.
So it's not like we don't have fetch lands. They're just different, right? So it's possible that you could put this trigger on the stack. You're at 13. What do you do? Oh, I take a damage. Okay, well, I'm going to crack my fetch land and...
gain 2.
I guess it doesn't really net you extra life. But yeah, I'm going to gain 2 plus another one, puts you at 11, plus then you're going to lose life again. You know what I mean? Like, you could force the damage through in such a way that it makes it very, very painful decision. I was thinking there's a way you can make them gain a life, but I don't think there's a way to make them gain life at instant speed. But it does give you a situation where you can kind of control at least your life total very, very well, and you're not going to lose the game this way. Something to think about. You actually wanted to go which direction?
Red, black, burn.
And we kind of were talking about there's just a
and
huge...
And you're going to cut out.
We really are
going to
be...
Oh,
we really
nope.
are going to be 8-minute segments. No? We're good? We're still there?
Yep. I mean, you're cracking up, but I can hear you.
All right, excellent. So tell me about your deck. As we figured out, I can at least hear you. So tell me about this deck, and then we'll see what happens.
Okay, so like I was saying in the show that we recorded previously, I plan on going black-red burn because, well, you have drain life, you have cards that you can discard to do damage to them as well, plus you have, just different burn packages. And at the very worst, it's going to be a burn deck that's going to have to go beyond turn 5. And, I mean, yeah, historically, burn isn't the best format, especially not in standard, but I don't know, I kind of like the idea of having only to get them down to 13, and then, winning the game. Because I know that, you remember playing with me when I was just head over heels for Hidetsugu's second right, where, get them down to 10, pay 4 mana, do 10 damage.
Yeah, see, that was... I remember my brother actually taking a burn deck with him to a PPTQ... Or, sorry, a PTQ back in, probably 8 years ago, 9 years ago, something. Back when I think it was still called Type 2, before it was modern. And
yep.
That was his main win condition. He's like, well, I'm going to get them to 10 with this spell, and this spell, and then I'll cast this spell on the next turn and win the game. And he lost so many matches due to the fact that someone was able to
go down to
crack
9
fetch land, or yeah, basically cheating underneath or over or gaining one or whatever over the game, and it really put him in a funk. So these kind of effects have a tendency to be real difficult. Again, though, if there's a card out there in standard, which I don't know if there is, that you can make target player gain a life or gain so much life, especially at instant speed, it could be really good. Like, put this on the stack, this trigger on the stack, and then be like, boom, gain life to you're at 13 or whatever.
Right.
You know, especially after the first or second time they've done this trick, to try to, like, avoid it.
I think the only thing in standard right now is Healing Hands. That's target player gains 4, and then you draw a card. But it's at sorcery speed.
Yeah. See, that's probably not going to get the job done, but... Yeah, I'm curious to see if you can make it work. I think it would be exciting to take it out of nowhere. And when you win... And I will say this, because I won with this card. But again, it was never in my deck. I won it off my opponent's deck. Both times he drew it, he played it. And I was able to just, like, almost immediately, the very next turn, take and put him at 13. Or the turn after. And it won the game. It feels great. It's an awesome feeling when you win with that card. However, like you said, I don't know what it's like to win with that card in my deck.
I think it may even have to go with Demonic Pact.
Like, you have it as a one of or something?
Nope. Just a playset of both.
Oh, the Demonic Pact, the one that draws 4 and the boomerang and stuff?
Yeah, like the...
I see, I gotcha, I like it. Like blue-black.
Yeah, blue-black, possibly white.
Is there a good way in white to, like, return it back to your hand or destroy an enchantment?
Yeah, it'd have to be a destroy enchantment. I mean, with that new 3-mana sorcery that you exile a permanent and then exile, like, a creature enchantment or planeswalker or whatever it was, the common right out of the set.
Yeah, there's some stuff I don't know how much I love it or not. So my troll is Westvale Abbey. This is a land that taps for a colorless. For 5 mana, pay 1 life, you get a 1/1 white and black colorless, I think, cleric. Or you can spend 5, tap it, sacrifice 5 creatures, and it transforms. And it transforms into a 9/7 flying, indestructible, lifelink, haste creature. I told the story at the PPTQ. I was already tilted pretty bad, which we'll kind of talk about later on. And I sat down with my opponent who had the... we looked it up earlier on the first half of the show, now I can't remember. He had the enchantment that says, pay 1, discard a card, and make a 1/1 knight, I think, with Death Touch?
Mm-hmm.
Or with Lifelink, sorry, Lifelink. And it is called... I'm almost there. I know it's almost there. The card is called... Call the Bloodline. So, the Call the Bloodline, and he had this really great Madness deck, and he was going. But his main win condition, or basically his only win condition, was this land, where he got to 4 creatures off of this Call the Bloodline, and then he went to make his 5th one, and he said, I do this too. I'm like, whoa, hang on. You have some sort of effect that happens when you get the 5 creatures? He's like, yeah, I transform this into... I'm like, well, hang on a second. Let's just kill the 4th creature with this other one on the stack. He's like, okay. And then I put some pressure on him, and he was able to kind of recover a little bit and get his 5th creature and make this into a creature. And then he attacked me with it the next turn. I did a little bit of math. I realized it was flying and indestructible. My only removal spell left in my hand at that moment destroyed a tapped creature, which wasn't going to get the job done. So I really wasn't like, all right, never mind. But I looked down. I realized he was at 9 life, and I was at 12 life. So I went, okay, well, I could take a hit of this thing once, use my own Call of the Bloodline, getting rid of my removal spell, and be able to attack for lethal. Well, so I take my damage. He says, all right, in my turn, I untap, I throw away, I don't throw anything away, because I already made it at the end of the turn. I say, attack you for 9, or attack you for lethal, I said. He goes, I'm at 16, lifelink. And I was like, no one said anything about lifelink. He's like, well, you picked the card up to read it. I said, I picked it up to read it to make sure that that L word that was printed next was actually indestructible, or I word was actually indestructible, and not something else. He's like, well, sorry. I'm like, and he didn't even bother to mention the fact that it had lifelink, and or that you were adjusting life totals. I was pretty salty, and I felt pretty asshole-y about it. Immediately thereafter, because I'm like, all right, I just scooped my cards up, and I said, let's go to the next game, and I apologized for being a poor sport, but I was tilted, and that was not the kind of match to redeem myself with, I guess I should say.
Right.
However, thinking about it, the removal spell that I used to get rid of that fourth creature at instant speed was actually the instant speed.
To the slaughter. What's it called?
Thank you. To the slaughter. I'm trying to think of what that's actually called, though.
It's called to the slaughter.
When you get to sacrifice a creature. That's fine. Well, whatever. I knew what all this stuff was the
Bones
first
blunkers.
Time. Anyway, so I should have just let him make this creature. Again, I didn't realize what it even was at this point in time. Just like, oh, you have some big effect that happens when you have five creatures, let's kill that. You know what I mean? Let's prevent that from happening. I didn't take the time and look and see what it was. If I did, I could have just had him, okay, make your one creature, and then made him sacrifice that creature. Edict effect. It's called an edict effect. You could make them... I could have made him sacrifice that creature after he spent all of his resources and wiped his own board. And that would have been game. And I think that would have totally changed the momentum and the mindset in my brain, and there was no way I would have lost that tournament. So anyway, that's why Westvale Abbey is on my troll card list, because it came out and it trolled me real hard.
Right, and that kind of, actually, it kind of brings me back to something that we talked about a while ago, and that was, if the information is on the card, it is up to both players to be aware of the board state.
Yeah, I would agree. It also behooves you, especially in situations where you're starting. Like, I knew I was tilting. I knew that I was agitated.
Right.
And before I even started playing the game, I said, give me 30 seconds to try to put myself in a better headspace. I'm still angry. And I sat there, and I gave myself 30 seconds to think about it, and we started playing, and I just slid right back into my anger mode. And in those situations, what you really, really have to do is just take 5 seconds here, 5 seconds there, and say, okay, let me figure out exactly what is going on. Because, again, I had imperfect information, kind of leaping to conclusions that I shouldn't have. And had I paused and took a second, I think it would have been a different story.
Right.
And like I said, it's definitely something that we all probably could use some work out, which is one of the things that, as trolls, we want our opponents to do.
Right.
Right. That's the advantage that we're trying to game for, is to get somebody knocked off balance, so then it sways the game in our favor so hard. I mean, it was like a totally different game. Like, he... At one time, I was completely convinced that he was cheating me. That's how far tilted off I was. And this is a good friend of mine, and I don't think that he would intentionally cheat at Magic to win a few extra packs at a pre-release.
Which one is
this? You
know
what I mean? This was Cub.
Oh, okay.
I was playing against Cub.
And he is trolly as sin.
Sure. But, again, I think it's just a matter of... I was convinced that he was cheating me. I'm like, dude, you have an extra land out. Where'd this extra land come from? How come... You've managed... He's like, well, I just kept all lands in this card. I'm like, you kept all lands in this card and drew nothing but gas after that, including your, you know, all four of your four of removal spell? Like, no. There's something going on here. But again, yeah, it was just the mind space that he put me in, or the previous opponent, like, set me up to be in, and he just put me in that by being able to have the answers at the right time, and it just pushed me right over that edge, and he was able to capitalize and take advantage of it.
Right.
Again, exactly the kind of thing that we want people to do, or we want us to, ourselves to do here. And we're hoping others can learn how to do by listening to us. But at the same time, you have to be able to counter that on your own. And I don't have a good way to advise people not to do that. So we kind of skipped ahead and we talked a little bit more about being tilted there than it was on the show notes. We wanted to talk about it. But you had a burn deck that you wanted to show off, a colorless burn deck. Basically, you were using all these different colorless burn spells and Herald of Kozilek. Am I remembering right?
Yeah. So it is using blue-red mana to cast colorless or devoid spells. The creature base is for Herald of Kozilek, and, you know, it's blue-red and a colorless for a 2/4 that makes your colorless spells cost one less to cast. And then we have the four colored spells in the deck are just anticipate for obvious reasons. Early game we have, in all of our counter spells, they do exile their spells rather than put them in the graveyard. And that's horribly awry. There's three of those, four spell shrivels, and four void shatters. And then for the burn package, we do have Reality Hemorrhage, which does 2 damage to target creature or player for 2 mana at instant speed. Touch of the Void is sorcery speed, 3 damage to target creature or player for 3 mana, and if it dies, it's exiled instead. And then 4 mana for an instant speed Consuming Sinkhole, which exiles target land creature, or it does 4 damage to target player. And then we have, you know, one of your favorite enchantments of this set, which is Molten Nursery. 3 mana, red and 2, that whenever you cast a colorless spell, it deals 1 damage to target creature or player. And all of the spells in the deck are colorless. So it's really nothing but gas once you get that Molten Nursery on the field.
Sure.
And then we have 2 Endbringers, which it costs a colorless and 5, and it untaps during each other player's untap step. And then it has 3 abilities. The first one, tap it to deal 1 damage to target creature or player. Tap a colorless in it to deal target, make target creature can't attack or block this turn, or tap 2 colorless in it to draw a card. And then, like, those are all the spells. The lands in the deck, play set of Shivan Reef, 4 islands, 4 Shrine of the Forsaken Gods, 4 Corrupted Crossroads, 4 Seagate Wreckage, and that one makes a colorless, or you can tap 2 in a colorless to draw a card. But you can only activate that if there's no cards in hand, but still, you know, late game with a burn deck, you're going to want some juice. So you can activate the Seagate Wreckage to draw a card, as well as activate the Endbringer after that to draw 2 for 5 mana. And then finally, for the last 3 lands, Wandering Firmaroil, which that's the one that turns into a 1/4 that can become a 4/1 at instant speed. And that's pretty much the deck.
So, I'm listening to hear you describe the deck a little bit more closely, honestly, I'm not going to lie, than I did the first time around.
Right.
And I wonder if this is the deck that you want brain in the jar. Brain in a jar.
I'm going to have to go look at that card again.
So, first of all, Brain in the Jar is a 2-mana artifact. It says one tap, put a charge counter on Brain in the Jar, then you may cast an instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on Brain in a Jar from your hand without paying its mana cost. Now, there's not a bunch of ones in your list, but I think you could probably slide some like collateral damages in. Possibly some other... I don't know, Gather is not coming up with the new one-mana sorcery, or one-mana instance or sorceries. And I just looked for the instance. I need to delete this and look for sorceries now. But it is possible that there's enough things in here that this could be exciting in a deck like this. I don't know. You got Clutch of Currents. That's a thing. If you're willing to go with some other colors, Despises and Duresses are good.
Well, Despise won't be.
Calls you a card. Magnetic. Oh, that's true. it isn't Con.
Yep.
No! Yep. I'm going to miss that card so much. Duresses and Dragons.
Yep.
But you also have Slip Through Space and Magnetic Insight that lets you draw a card. You still have to be able
hold
to
on.
Discard
hold
a
hold on
land.
1 minute.
Hold on a whole minute? Oh, boy.
Go on.
That was a quick minute.
Yeah, I'm bad at time and space.
but, like, Magnetic Insight will let you draw two cards. So you pay your colorless still, and you pitch your land, but you draw two cards. I don't know, I'm just trying to think of things that, like, Culture Currents could be really good as an instant, for example.
Right, just to bounce their thing.
Bounce their thing. Rush of Ice, also really good as an instant. Like, it becomes way better for one blue tap target creature doesn't untap. And then in late game, it turns, you know, awakens the land or whatever. I don't know, I'm just... It seems like there was a lot of twos and threes as you were talking.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to play some of these two or three mana spells, essentially for one mana, seemed pretty exciting. So, let's when you get an opportunity, hopefully tonight, try getting me the deck list put together somewhere, and we'll get that posted, and we'll take some input from the Peanut Gallery listening. But Brain in the Jar is definitely one of those cards that could be very, very interesting going forward, especially in control shells or... decks that are primarily based around, removal or instants or sorceries and casting them for extremely reduced amounts of mana.
Right.
I'm very excited to see this card. Alright, so we talked about being tilted already, so let's talk about our pre-release situations, but how our pre-release went. What kind of things that we encountered, what we thought was good and was bad. So I don't want to get the previous show confused, but I think you told me you went 4-1, is that right, Travis?
3-1.
3-1?
Yeah.
So that's pretty good, pretty reasonable. What was your best card in your pool?
Okay, so like, the best card I played with.
Yes, that's what I mean. I mean the best card that actually ended up in your deck.
Okay, the best card that ended up in my deck that after the first round I played with, because the first round I just scrapped that after I had played it. But the best card was actually Pack Guardian.
Pack Guardian.
And that is the It cost 2 green and 2 colorless for a wolf spirit that has flash, and it's a 4/3. And when it enters the battlefield, you may discard a card. If you do, put a 2/2 green wolf onto the battlefield.
So, what you're telling me, it is 2 cards for 6 power?
Yes.
At instant speed?
At instant speed.
Wow, that is pretty good.
Yeah, and I had 2 of them in the deck.
Did you have any synergies that kind of worked with that for...
Let's see, where's that land at? Or that spell, not land. A spell that actually surprised me quite a bit in the delirium sense, as well as fetching or fixing. Fork in the road.
Oh yeah, the red one that gives you the shock or the...
No.
That's not it?
No, fork on the road. It costs a green and the colorless. It's a sorcery, and you search your library for up to 2 basic land cards and reveal them. Put one of them into your hand and the other one into your graveyard, then shuffle your library.
Okay, okay.
So, I was running Naya, red, green, and white for the tournament. And so, it not only fixes the land... But it also triggers the delirium, which
you can, right? By putting a land in your graveyard, that's a one more of the types to go for your board.
Right, and casting Fork in the Road gives you half of delirium.
Right, it would be 2 that way, yeah.
Yeah, and I had... Oh, what was it? Hold on, I'm looking through my deck right now.
So, what you're saying is that gave you another thing to discard... So you could discard a creature, for example, or an instant or something.
Well, no, you have to discard a land.
No. I meant for your pack guardian.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a land.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good then. So there isn't a land with madness. That's what I was wondering. It does this thing interact with madness, but it doesn't look like it does.
No.
Okay.
But
still, for 4 mana for 6 power...
At instant speed.
At instant speed is still... Pretty great.
Right. And before I go on with the deck and, the power card that I had, I do want to, tell people, just because you have an overwhelming amount of rares in a certain color or colors doesn't mean you have to play that. And
right.
I made that mistake because... When I opened my packs, I had, let's see, for my pre-release, it's Avacyn's Judgment, the 2 mana, deal 2 damage to any number of creatures and or players, and then it has the Madness Fireball effect.
Okay.
So I had that, Devil's Playground, the loot, 2 Elusive Tormentors, and 2 The Slaughter. And then I had quite a few cards that, allowed me to cast Madness cards, which I had quite a bit of, and then I had some removal. So I initially built the deck red-black vampires / human werewolves because, I had quite a bit of each. And then that didn't work out because it was just too slow. So after that first round, I did revamp the whole thing, and I ended up going Naya because, having, the 2 Pack Guardians, the Silverfur Partisan, the Ulvenwald Hydra, a.k.a. Mini Primeval Titan... And then Avacyn's Judgment and Devil's Playground plus Mana Fix, it just works so much more efficiently.
I mean, it sounds like you did, you figured out the shortcomings of your deck and you found the correct deck that you should have built the whole time.
Yeah.
Do you think if you would have had the correct deck and it was running that you would have been undefeated that tournament?
Oh, 100%. Because after I switched it over, the next 3 rounds, I lost 1 game. And that was to the player who had 2 Gitrog monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I feel that I would have went undefeated with it, especially since the person who beat me ended up... His pairing, his end result of the tournament was less good than mine.
Let's see. Well, I want to ask myself this. Oh, hang on. First, before we get there, will that card your spirit wolf.
Mm-hmm. The Pack Guardian?
The Pack Guardian. Will it become a standard card, do you think?
I think it will in certain decks. Obviously not all of them. I think it's just going to be... it's going to be a powerhouse in the certain decks simply because it is 4 mana for 6 power, and the only downside is that you're losing a land. But right. With Drownyard Temple, for example, there's no downside to that because you can just pay 3 mana and bring it back.
Yeah, and I suppose even if you, say, don't have a land in your hand and you need to play this flash creature, it's still a 4-3.
Right. I mean, so. Yeah, it's still a 4-3 at instant speed.
Seems okay. It may or may not get there, I'm not sure. The card that I considered the best, I had the opposite problem that you had, really. My deck was relatively straightforward in front of me as I was opening packs. I had a lot of powerful red and black cards, and my deck just kind of built itself almost.
Yep.
The card that I felt was probably the most powerful card was Sin Prodder. I think I feel like we talked about this a little bit. It's kind of like the reversed Bob. Like
you got the
devil. One guy, I did. If the one guy is the reverse Flash, then I'm going to say this is the reverse Bob. So it costs 3 mana for a 3/2.
With menace.
And at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. Any opponent may have you put that card into your graveyard. If the player does, Sin Prodder does damage equal to that card's converted mana cost. Otherwise, put that card into your hand.
Yep.
So, basically what this guy did was say, never draw a land. Right? Never get the land. And it also said, never draw a bomb unless they're already under a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't have any problems with at all. Like, he just did so much work. I really feel like this is a card that should see a huge amount of play in Standard. Collected Company is still around. It loves threes. This thing is a 3. I'm really inclined to go green, red, Collected Company. Green, red, maybe X. I don't know yet. Because the power of this guy, I think he's just so good. Imagine you're at low life and I have a Sin Prodder and something else, say like a, not a Den Protector, but the Velociraptor. What am I thinking of?
Death Mist
Raptor. I have those two cards, and I reveal to you a Collected Company. Your life total is probably already relatively low. Like, you take 4 to stick that in the graveyard. Like, it becomes a pretty tough call.
Right.
So yeah, I do think this Sin Prodder is a very good card. I would like to tell you that Wolf of Devil's Breach is equally good. That is the 5-mana 5/5 that when it attacks, you basically discard a card and it fireballs them. But I never got an opportunity to try it because as soon as I played it, like, they focused down that creature super hard.
Right.
So I really wanted to try it, but it just wasn't there. I do definitely believe my card will make it to Standard, and I think it should actually probably warp Standard in a way that Bob did. Because unlike Bob, you want to keep your converted mana cost low. With Sin Prodder, you don't really care.
Yeah, with Sin Prodder, it's do they care?
Exactly. It's all about, hey, do you want me to draw this extra card, or would you rather take a buttload of damage?
Yeah.
Whatever you want. I could also see this Sin Prodder going into like the blue-red prowess deck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, do you want me to have this equivalent of Titan Strength? Or no? Do you want me to have another Flying Evasion Prowess guy? Or no?
I've been complaining about 3 lands this whole game. do you want me to have a fourth land so I can, you know, run you over?
The answer for fourth land is always no.
Yeah.
The answer, that's the problem. Lands are always no. No, thank you. So if you get in a situation where you do need a land, then it does get a little trickier.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a thing. Okay, so our next question here. Skid Invasion. Are you familiar with the card, Travis?
I am. I had one.
I did, too. And I had several people look through my day one pre-release pool, and this was the only card that people told me I was... Well, people told me I needed this card in my deck, and I was wrong to not have it in the deck. So if you don't know what it is, it's one red for an enchantment aura. The enchanted creature attacks each combat if able. When enchanted creature dies, return Skid Invasion to your battlefield transformed, and it transforms into a 3/4 insect. So I didn't play this card. I was thinking, oh man, it's gonna, because I'm never going to be blocking, right? Like I figured I'm always going to be attacking. I don't want them to want to attack me. I certainly don't want to make them attack me. And I certainly don't want to have to trade one of my creatures off to get a different creature. All of that mindset, I think, now is wrong.
Yes.
I think I want that creature out of the way. I think there's going to be opportunities where I'm going to have a creature that can block. And I also think that if I do have to trade my creature off for their creature, getting a 3/4 back is relatively low cost. Other than that, I feel like my deck was very, very strong. Very good. I'll try to remember to take a picture of it, my day one deck, and get that posted with the show. It may not happen, but I will try. But I don't want to get into too many details of that. The only other card that people kind of were like, maybe is better or worse than some other cards that I ran was Reduced to Ashes, which deals 5 damage to target creature, and it exiles at sorcery speed. I chose not to play that. I had so many other removal spells that did not have the limitation of being a sorcery speed that I didn't feel like I needed it. I have one other card here that people kind of gave me some shenanigans for, and that card is True Faith Censor. Are you familiar with this particular equipment?
I'm not entirely sure. It doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. Well, it's 2 mana to play, 2 mana to equip. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and vigilance. And as long as the equipped creature is a human, it gets an additional +1/+0. Now, I didn't have an overly abundant number of humans, right? So basically it said +1/+1 and vigilance.
Okay.
But often that was enough to just dominate the game.
Right.
The vigilance, in my opinion, cannot be understated in limited, but really, having the permanent +1/+1 of equipment, I think equipment gets a bad rap in limited environments, especially when the costs are relatively low. For example, 2 to play and 2 to equip, that's the same mana as an Umazaz Jitte. I understand people are saying, oh, well, this card is not as good as that. Well, clearly. However, you take, and one of the creatures that I had was a flip guy. He was like a 2/2 for 3 that flipped into a 4/4. It was a red werewolf. I cannot think of what his name was. It didn't matter. But often I would get him out and equip... all I would do is equip my equipment, would be my spell for the turn. So I'd attack with a 3/3. Equipping the equipment was my only action that turn because I wanted my creature to flip. And then all of a sudden I had a 5/5 with vigilance the next turn. That was often enough to keep people from being able to do anything after that. And that's something to keep in mind. Moving equipment around, what has happens as a sorcery doesn't count as a spell. So you have things you can do on your turn without, if you want to flip over a creature. Also, I found numerous times that I was really glad that I had it, to flip their creatures back. Like, I could get a 2 or 3 mana spell pretty easily, mm-hmm. but finding the second one was often very difficult. So having such a low curve with this True Face Sensor, it was a spell that I could keep in my hand that I wasn't always punished if I didn't have out. Like, say if I had a 2-drop creature, it would have been a totally different story. Like, I would have definitely wanted that 2-drop out there on the field almost every time. But this True Face Sensor was something I could sit in my hand for a little while to get that second spell to turn a creature back over if I needed to, which did happen a couple of times. The other thing I noticed at my particular event was an abundance of Planeswalkers were opened, like a lot. Some people, I think I counted, I played against 4 Sorns, I think.
Jeez.
And then I also played against at least one player that had both the flip Planeswalker, Arlen Cord,
yeah,
and the red-white Planeswalker, Nahari the Hardbringer, I think is her name. At least one player had both of those. That was my draw, day one. Turns out that 6/6 Trample, Indestructible Werewolves are hard to beat.
No.
Yeah, I mean...
crazy.
And that game, actually, if I would have had another 30 seconds on the clock before time was called, I would have won that game, or that match as well. Which is what actually put me on tilt for the final round. We shuffled up. We had 2 minutes left on the clock. I presented. I had a mulligan. I shuffled real fast. I drew and kept my hand. I had the 2-drop witch that discard a card and it flips over to a 3/2
yeah.
flying creature.
Black so I had Delver. Her.
Correct. The Black Delver. I had her. I played her on turn 2. Attacked for 3 on turn 3. I played the Transforming Werewolf. I passed the turn. My opponent didn't have a 3-mana spell to cast, I guess. Or no, he was stuck on 2 lands. So my werewolf transformed into a 4/4. So I was able to attack for... I played and equipped my equipment on my 4/4. And this started extra turns. No, it started extra turns... the turn he flipped over. I'm sorry. So then I attacked for 8. I think I put him at 9, approximately. The last card, I had 2 cards left in my hand. One was Skin Prodder, and the other was they give your creature double strike, +1/+1, and double strike till end of turn. And that was my last, I had one more combat where I could attack. And he actually drew his 3rd land to lock down my 5/5, the Moonlight enchantment, I forget exactly what it's called. So he prevented my 5/5 from attacking, which was fine. But I didn't have enough mana to move my equipment over and give it +1/+1 and double strike on my flyer. Where if I would have drew a land, I would have been able to do that and just win the game straight out. Instead, I had to play my Skin Prodder and attack for 3. And then I showed my hand to my opponent and said, I would win next turn. What do you want to do? He's like, oh, we'll draw. I'm like, are you sure? Because if we draw, neither one of us are going to beat the winner. Neither one of us will be the winner of the tournament. He's like, oh, yeah, man. One of us totally can still win.
Nope.
And I was like, no, it's not possible. It's just the way it's going to work, because even if we draw, one of us will play the undefeated person at the tournament, and even if we were to win, there's a very slight chance that could happen. But if, you know, you're playing the only person who's also undefeated, like, no, it's still possible. So we took a draw. And I played the only other undefeated person again. I was on tilt with my mind space and basically punted it real bad. But it was possible. I had it, for one of us to have won, it would have had to be me, and it would have had to been that turn that I screwed up that we talked about earlier being fixed. So, what other cards kind of stood out to you at the pre-release, but either for your opponent or for you or whatever, that you think will make a splash in Standard or crazy nuts in Limited, and people probably may not realize it yet? You know, stuff that kind of falls in like the third to sixth range in a draft, etc.
All right, so cards that I think will make a splash in Limited. And I'm going outside of the rares and mythics. I'm just going with commons
right,
and uncommons.
Exactly.
Because, well, obviously that's what the majority of your deck's going to be. I think
Autumn Gloom?
Yeah.
That was the first one that I thought of, too.
All right, well, we're on the...
That card is ridiculous. So green and two for an enchantment.
Yep.
If you have Delirium at the beginning of your end step, transform it, and it transforms into, I believe, a Hexproof 4/4 Trample.
Yep, Trample and Hexproof.
But it has an activated ability of a black self-mill 1.
Yep.
So, yeah, that card definitely first on my list for things that, maybe not first pickable. Could be first pickable if you open, like, a terrible rare. But I definitely think there's a very high synergy with that particular card, and what's going on.
Yeah.
What else do you think might be very, very good in, Limited?
And I am...
Or Busted Quain's Stand.
I am saying this because of, I saw it in action in the pre-release. The person who played it opened... 4 Vessel of Paramnesia. And the...
Which one is that?
That is the blue one that target player mills 3. And you draw a card.
Okay.
The reason I say that is because he had 4 of them. And he also had the card that milled 13.
If you just have the card that mills 13, you win the game anyway.
Well, yeah, that and then...
Having extra ones are kind of pointless. But...
Right. But those for sure, simply because, well, the 4/4 Hexproof Trample is, I mean, come on. And then, you know, milling in a limited format is always good because your deck is always, I mean, 20 cards less.
Right.
A card that did a lot of work for me was Reaper of Flight Moonsilver.
Okay, I'm not sure about what that is.
It's 5 mana cost, 2 white and 3 colorless for a 3/3 flyer that when you have Delirium, you can sacrifice another creature and... Reaper of Flight Moonsilver gets +2/+1 till end of turn.
Okay.
I actually Alpha Strike with this card on the pre-release. Let's see. Other cards that I think are, you know, going to be just, well, ridiculous. If you build the deck right, Obsessive Skinner. That's when it comes into play, put a 1/1 on target. 1/1 counter on target creature, and Delirium put a 1/1 counter on target creature, and that would be at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep.
Yeah. I actually have 2 here. They're also both Delirium cards. Topplegeist is a 1/1 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls, which is above average for your 1/1 flyer by a pretty large amount, but it also has Delirium at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep. If you have the Delirium condition, tap target creature. This thing actually did a ton of work for me in the games that I was actually able to use it and get some work done. Unruly Mob can get out of control very quickly in a game where you're doing a lot of trading, especially if you're on D. It really gives you an opportunity to do some stuff. And then the card that I think really kind of went to town for me in a lot of situations with Delirium was Tooth Collector. For those of you who don't know, it's a black and 2 for a 3/2. It the human rogue. When it enters the battlefield, target creature gets -1/-1, which isn't that big of a deal. But delirium, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if you meet the delirium condition, give a creature, target creature that player controls, -1/-1. So, in the situation that we kind of have now, right, where people, again, are making 2-1 flyers for 3, and all these 1-1s that are floating around, beginning of your upkeep, I'll kill one.
Yeah.
If not, I'll make your 4/4 flyer into a 3/3 flyer. I'll take your 11/11 and make it a 10/10. Oh, that probably doesn't matter so much. But you get in these situations where it's easy for Tooth Collector to kind of take over a game and really set things up in a situation where there's a no-win scenario going on. This thing actually got forced down so hard so fast. The only other card in my deck that I had that got forced down as hard was the Wolf of Din's Breach, the Mythic. So if you can just picture that, like, the instant kill spells went to the Tooth Collector and the Mythic. Because I just feel this card is so good. I had some other good standouts. I was really impressed with the Blood Mad Vampire. That is the 4-1 madness for a red and a colorless that grows when it does combat damage to a player. Let's see, I had one other uncommon. Oh, I talked about the Incorrigible Use earlier. Again, it's madness that has haste for a 4-3. Lightning Axe is back. That's going to be pretty sweet. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot of good stuff. I think you really have to figure out if you're going to go madness early, and if you're going to, you really have to count your madness enablers versus your madness cards. You want to make sure you have enough good, reliable madness enablers at all times if you're going to go madness. Delirium, it's a little bit different, right? Like, things are going to end up in your graveyard sooner or later. You just got to make sure that you spread out your types. That was something I had an issue with the pre-release, was making sure that if I'm going to put these delirium cards in my deck, what are the odds that I'm going to have delirium? So,
right.
Situations where I may have played another creature, I had to make sure that, oh, I need to have at least, say, 2 sorceries in my deck, or at least 3 sorceries in my deck, to have an opportunity for these 2 or 3 delirium creatures to do their job. I have to play this bad artifact creature because I need an artifact. There's a lot of situations in that for me. Anything else that kind of like sits in your mind about the pre-release and what you learned getting ready to go into your first draft, I assume, on Friday?
Yeah, our first draft is on Friday. It's not really something that I've learned, but something that's been kind of weighing on my mind through previous sealed / pre-release events, you know, and that is, I don't necessarily, even when you do really well, just because of the prize payout, I don't think sealed is worth it as much as drafting is.
I know for us, and the way that we have adjusted our pre-releases, because we do a 4-round maximum is kind of how I'm looking at it, Magic tournament, where you win a round, you get a pack. This way, it's designed more for fun and for everybody to have a little bit of a chance at a prize.
Right, so every round is a win-a-pack?
Every round is a win-a-pack.
Okay, see, you know, the store here, it does do half of the rounds are win-a-packs on average. And let's see, for the pre-release, the midnight pre-release, I really dislike the way they do this. They only do 3 rounds and then just go from the pairing bracket or whatever. You know, like how your opponents did and everything, to adjust who went into first and second and all that, you know, so on and so on. And I think that if you're doing a midnight pre-release, you need to do the whole tournament. You can't just be like, oh, well, we're all tired, so we're going home.
Well, I mean, I think you could reasonably go four rounds. Four rounds, that's usually 5 hours, maybe 5.5 hours of play. That's usually a good spot that you can wrap up for the night.
Right.
If you have, like, 50 people, though, keep in mind, 50 people with the Wizards of the Coast list should take it to six rounds.
Yep.
And six rounds at a pre-release, a midnight pre-release, is a long time. So I understand cutting things short and going from there. But, like I said, the way we kind of do it, we go four rounds, then we cut. Everyone gets their Winnipeg packs. And usually in the fourth round, we have a pretty fair idea of how many packs are going to be left over from the entries.
Right.
And then we take those packs and we divide them amongst the top eight. Usually what we try to do is there might be one or two extra packs of the new set, and then we try to keep do the rest of the prize packs in older packs, with the option for people to either turn those packs in later for the new set, or just pick up the new set when it comes out the following week for release. And we only do that because for whatever reason we are continuously not getting the amount of product that now we're promised for this shop of our size. I mean, we just had a 50-person PPTQ less than a month ago. We constantly sell out of our pre-release kits during pre-release weekend.
Right.
For whatever reason, we're just not getting our product. So it makes it really difficult for us to give out 100% of the new product that day. But if people want new product and they're willing to wait, we can give them the new product the following Thursday at midnight if they want to come in on Thursday. So that's just how it works for us. I kind of understand. I get it. You know, especially if you're like me, you get up at 10 o'clock. You get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. In my situation, I stream basically all Friday. And then I go and I work the Friday Night Magic, and then I work the pre-release. You know, it could turn into a 22-hour day pretty easily. I don't always make the best decisions after 22 hours, let alone getting myself home. So I can understand cutting it back a little bit. And I know before I started doing this, working the pre-releases, Johnny, our local guy for the midnight ones, he would sometimes be there until 6 or 7 in the morning
and then
on these, and then turn around and have to be back at 10.
Yeah.
And that just made it real rough for him. So I get it. I understand. But again, I think three rounds plus an hour build time is a little too light for something like a pre-release. Now, sealed in general, I kind of understand. Do whatever you normally do for your payouts. But to me, a sealed, I do not play for the prizes. When I play a sealed, I play sealed because I enjoy playing sealed. If I want to draft, sometimes I draft for the prizes, but usually I draft because I enjoy playing draft.
Right.
If I want to play a tournament for the prizes, I'm going to play a standard deck. Almost always. And that's because I'm a constructed deck, because I'm not a big modern person. But the prizes are just usually there much better for a bring-your-own constructed kind of event.
Okay.
I mean, because think about it. If you're going to pay, say, $10 or $15... for like a PPTQ, right? You're going to pay your judge somewhere between $3 and $4, maybe $5 a person there. So that gives you between $5 and $10 that you put into prize product, right?
Yeah.
Plus then the shop should, in my opinion, make a little bit of money in there. So say like the shop gets a dollar that they normally don't get. And then depending on the normal price for the packs, at the arena we do 3 for $10, so we can usually do 3 packs a person. For certain events, we do 2.5 packs a person, and to keep that dollar to pay our judges as much as we pay them.
Yeah.
Because we live in the middle of nowhere, it's hard as hell to get a judge. That's why I'm working on becoming our judge.
Yep.
Level 2 judge. So, I mean, it does take a little bit of work, it does take a little bit of effort. And I want everyone to kind of understand that, you know, I get it. Everyone wants more prizes. Everyone likes a lot of prizes. But the shops need to stay open. How many prizes are you going to get if the shop is closed? So we'll put that out there as well. All right, so we're hit an hour, plus we got 5 minutes from before. So let's just talk real quick about these unbannings, because I don't care about the bannings. I didn't play this deck. I barely play Modern as it is. I don't care. But the Sword of the Meek and Ancestral Visions are very sexy to me. I love unbannings. I think the unbannings are the best things. Does this get you going in any way, shape, or form?
Not really.
Not really?
Yeah, because I'm not going to play either of those decks. Like
either of those decks?
Like the Sword of the Meek and Thopter Foundry. I'm not going to play that deck. It's just...
Like it goes everything.
Yeah, it could, but...
If you have access to blue... or white or black, like it goes in there. It goes in the token deck easy.
Yeah, that's why I'm just kind of like, meh.
The same thing with Ancestral Visions. Like, it goes in anything that's blue pretty easily.
Yeah.
I think the reason I'm mostly excited is because it went from, what, $6 or $7 to, like, $90 overnight?
Yeah, pretty much.
And I have a bunch. So I'm pretty stoked to be able to cash out at least of that card relatively early.
Oh,
hopefully.
You want to talk about price spiking for no reason? Archangel of Tithes.
I imagine that card's going to go up very high.
At the beginning of the week, actually on Friday of last week, it was sitting at $5-6. It's at $20 as of last night.
Wow.
And there's no tournament over the weekend that caused the spike. It just was like, no, gonna jump.
So, just kind of taking a look at one of our favorite sites, MTG Stocks. And I'm just kind of looking through here. Bird of Paradise had a big spike. Westvale Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
Westvale Abbey had a big spike. That was my troll card. It went from $4 pre-sale to $18. I guess people figured that out. But I'm not seeing the Archangel on here, so let me... Come on. Here we go. And Archangel of Tithes says, drumroll please, today MTG Stocks, it's not the fastest site, yes, Archangel of Tithes, it's trying. Alright, so basically like you said, it was at $20 when it was printed, fell. And then, literally, from March 31st, like, there's a little bit of a climb, it looks like, and then it just skyrocketed. But it looks like it's on a downtick again already. So it may also just been bought up by speculators, thinking that now that, there's another White Angel, right?
Yep. I think there's two.
Is there two? That there ain't that the angels are back. There might be a good angel, card, as it were. Which I don't really see like an angel enabler. Do you? Is there anything that's like all angels get X or something?
No,
I don't think so. And there's certainly not an angel lord. There's basically a spirit lord, which is insane, by the way. I don't know. Maybe they're expecting the mono white deck to make a huge comeback. I mean, it did pick up excellent removal spells in Angelic Purge and Declaration in Stone. I mean, it did get there. So maybe the mono white deck is there. But yeah, I don't know. I do enjoy the Ancestral Visions for financial reasons, but I also think it'll be good to play. That does make processors infinitely better, right? Because, I mean, it sits there for, is it four turns, I think, before it finally gets to go off. So even if you play it on turn one, if you have a processor on turn three, you can steal their, put their card in their graveyard. It could be pretty good. But the Sword of the Meat combo, I think it could just easily glue into stuff. Like, decks that did not have a reliable combo to just, like, go places, this is there.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're going to combo off forever with it. But it still takes a mana.
Right. But, I mean, just, you know, once they were released as unbanned, Thopter Foundry jumped from $3 all the way up to $17, and Sword of the Meek jumped from, like, hold on, $6 to almost $30.
Yeah,
and that's just,
right.
I mean, if you didn't have those cards before, now you're just kind of SOL, so. Eh.
Well, again, I think there's an awful lot of speculation going on that people are going to try buying them right away, where I think that you can, I think you can wait. I think they'll come down. Unless you have a big modern tournament that you really want to push them for right away. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. Alright, so I think we're going to kind of wrap up the show here. We'll kind of do our usual sign-off stuff. SamusGrobo.com for the show, or of course MTGCast for the show. You can send us an email, the2brews@gmail.com. Please check out the Twitch stream. Twitch.tv/SamusGrobo. Check out us on Twitter. I am Samus Grobo, all one word. He is Turtle Power, the number 319. I've been very impressed with your tweeting lately. You've been a tweeting machine.
Yeah.
I mean, you're no Donald Trump at tweeting, but you're definitely.
I have the best tweets.
The best tweets. With all the right spelling.
With all of the right everything.
So to close the show today, I actually took a quiz online where, I'm not going to lie, I got 8 out of 10, and these are questions about American history.
Okay.
So have you taken this quiz? It's floating around Facebook?
I have not.
All right. What agency did the United States government form in response to the launch of Sputnik? The Secret Service, NASA, IRS, or FEMA?
FEMA.
All right, are you trolling me, or is that your
real
answer?
That's my real answer.
All right, it was NASA, and the response to the launch of Sputnik, my friend.
Yeah, well, I know the Secret Service started probably late 17, mid 1800s.
Yep, it was very early.
The IRS was in the 1900s.
That was, no, it wasn't 1900s. It was with Hoover, I think, the first big progressive.
Yeah, in the 1900s.
Yeah, oh, okay, sure.
So
you realize Sputnik is that they shot the dog into outer space, right?
Right. I just okay. Kind of figured, you know, it's like, well, I don't, it was, like, okay, in my opinion, I would think that they started FEMA out of fear, because that was around the same time that the Cold War was going on, and, you know, blah, blah, blah with the nuclear war. So, you know, they're right, start, fine. Like, my first thought was, they created that out of fear.
The nuclear. Okay. But no, NASA, we got into the space race because of Sputnik. All right. Question two. What president said, those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves? John Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Johnson, Herbert Hoover. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves.
Okay. Don't think it was Hoover.
Well, Hoover was not a big freedom guy.
And who are the other three options?
John Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Johnson.
I think I'm going to go with Johnson.
Okay. The answer is Abraham Lincoln.
That was close. They're both dead.
That was they are both dead. So was Kennedy. All three of these.
All four of them are dead.
Abraham Lincoln. That's also factual. Abraham Lincoln wanted to free some slaves, my friend.
Yeah. But so, Andrew Johnson, well, you know, he was kind of there in the beginning, so he wanted wanted freedom from other people.
Sure, sure. Except he wanted to like duel people, I think. All right,
so he
so
shot
a question,
someone, whatever.
Lots of people. All right, so question that I got wrong. He was also had like keggers at the White House, if I remember
Sweet.
Correctly. Yeah, he's probably secretly your favorite.
Party on, Wayne.
All right, so what year did the California Gold Rush start?
49.
That's correct. The 49ers. I actually got that wrong.
I only know that because of football.
You would be 100% correct, the 49ers. As soon as you said 49, I went, yep, that's I should have remembered it from that. But I didn't. Who patented the frozen food process in 1930? Franklin D. Roosevelt, George W. Bush, the Jolly Green Giant, or Clarence Birdseye?
Well,
I'm going to give you this one. The Jolly Green Giant is made up.
Yes. Many people also believe that George W. Bush is also
Bush
made
is
up.
Is a vampire? Oh, sorry. I thought maybe he was a vampire and has been alive since 1930.
And I don't know who the last person was, so I'm going to say him.
Correct. You are absolutely correct. Excellent work by the process of elimination.
Through process of elimination what? Of, I don't know that guy. He's it.
What musical term did radio disc jockey Alan Freed coin in 1951? The wall of sound, rock and roll, grunge, or high fidelity?
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll is correct.
Because grunge didn't come out till the 90s.
What tragedy took place on April 15, 1912? The San Francisco earthquake, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and the sinking of the Titanic. And if you say the bombing of Pearl Harbor, we're going to be fighting.
Yeah, I was like, well, I know that happened in, you know, World War II. Let's see.
In December.
Yeah, I was like, that's
the day that will live in infamy.
Right. Like, I'm pretty sure that happened in wintertime. You know, 30 years after that date. Okay, so Titanic, earthquake, and what was the other? No, the triangle thing is irrelevant. I don't. The
Triangle Shirtwaist Fire.
I have no clue what that is.
Because that is made up, I believe.
Okay, then. So I'll go with Titanic.
You'd be correct, but I'm not understanding why this is an American tragedy, because that it was a British ship filled with British people.
Filled with immigrants.
Coming to America. If anything, Donald Trump would have swam out there and hit that ship.
Like, I'm pretty sure that, yeah, that one.
I'm not sure how that's in, I mean, it was coming to America, so it's kind of American history. The movie Titanic made lots of money in the United States. Anyway, whatever. We'll let it go.
Yeah.
Gideon Sundback? Sundback? Patented what clothes fastener in 1914? Now, this is a tricky question. Think about the year. 1914.
Okay.
The eyelet, the button fly, the zipper, or Velcro?
Considering I only know what a zipper and Velcro are, I'm going to go with buttonfly.
Okay, well, you'd be incorrect.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me.
Buttonfly is where you have a fly and you just use your buttons to button it up. That's the preferred method from the ages past. An eyelet is where the button actually goes through.
Okay, so it was Velcro.
A zipper. It was a zipper.
Ah, got it. Velcro
was like in the 80s, I think.
Yep.
Who flew the Spirit of St. Louis across the Atlantic in 1927?
Do you just know the answer? Amelia Earhart.
That would be incorrect. She is one of the options. Amelia Earhart, Roy Brown, William Boeing, Charles Lindbergh.
Not Brown.
Not
Let's
Brown.
Let's go with Lindbergh.
It was correct. Lindbergh. Good job. Who was the most famous female pilot of the earliest 20th century? Eleanor Roosevelt, Amelia Earhart, Greta Garbo, Charlie Nation.
See, I mean, I was close when I said Amelia.
That's right, just the wrong, question. I was answering.
Yeah, but it was, you know. Yeah, it was right after that, so I mean, I was close.
You're very, very close. What object debuted in 1949 and is sometimes referred to as a 45? A single-engine airplane, a rotary telephone, a portable television, or an LP single record? The fact that this is taking you this long is making me question your brain power today. It has been a stressful day of computers not working.
So what were the options again?
A single-engine airplane, a rotary telephone, a portable television, or an LP single record.
The record sounds like the most logical thing.
That would be correct. The 45 is also a single record. Congratulations. Yay! So by my understanding, you missed one?
No.
Two, three questions. Is that correct?
Yeah, something like that.
7 out of 10. You need to learn your history, my friend. However, a lot of people that were taking this particular test were getting less than 5. 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So you're smarter than or more knowledgeable than your average American.
Well, I mean, I already knew that. But also, some of those things are just, like, irrelevant to existence.
I mean, kind of, but you should know your history. Those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it. Like the Titanic. Don't build another boat called Titanic.
They're already doing that.
And sail it around in the ocean near the near iceberg.
Well, luckily they're launching it from Australia.
Oh, I mean, seems plausible. All right, Travis, do you have any closing thoughts for this particular episode of Two Trolls and a Brew? Other than to touch up on your basic American history.
Well, I don't think it just needs to be specified as American history as much as world history.
History's a thing.
Also, I plan on making a version 2 of Red Blue Mill. Everyone should give me Triskaidekaphobia, and I really like Heir of Falconwrath, a.k.a. Black Delver.
Yep, Black Delver is very good. The, that black girl. She'd go in places.
Other than that, troll on.
Troll on, everybody.